We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of Arizona Wildcats football. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment, or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, they have the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glenn and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. Justin Spears here with Mike Lev and Ryan Finley. We're at the Arizona Daily Star studio. What's going on, fellas?
I'm good. You're working on what, like your third coffee? This is a caffeine day for one Justin Spears, am I right?
Yes. Welcoming in a new addition to the family. My niece, mm-hmm. my brother and his wife, my sister-in-law, they just welcomed in a new child, so it's been a whirlwind for the last couple of days, and plus, you know, also working as well, so... Yeah, coffee's definitely been a big part of my diet recently.
Absolutely. And there's high school football tonight, and there's U of A football tomorrow night, and there is all sorts of things going on. So, Justin, you hang in there if you
I'm
want.
I'm trying to.
If you want Lev, we can have Lev do all the talking in this podcast. If you want to go take a nap, we can do that.
Oh, man.
You okay with that, Lev?
I thought you were going to say I had to go cover high school football.
It's been a while.
I have in the past. But, yeah, sneak in a nap somewhere, Justin.
I will.
Uncle Jay.
But before we talk U of A football, just so our listeners are aware, you can get this podcast on Apple Podcasts, and you can also download the Wildcaster app. It's on the App Store and Google Play. It's free. Just go to the App Store or Google Play, search the Wildcaster, and download the app. We got a lot of good stuff leading up to the big game on Saturday, Arizona facing Texas Tech. And Ryan, I asked you earlier this week on radio, it's not often Arizona faces a Power 5 non-conference opponent at Arizona Stadium.
It has been a long time, and Lev can speak to that because I know Lev has a storyline about that on Tucson.com today. But, I mean, this is Arizona's sort of grand return to facing real non-conference football teams. I believe after this year, there's nobody that they face in 2020, but then you get into 2021 and there's one Power 5 conference opponent every year for like the next decade. Lev, you speak to that a little bit. It's what does this mean for them, and how long has it been, do you think, since they played somebody this good at home?
Yeah, well, they played Oklahoma State
Rich Rod's first season.
They won that game. It's kind of a big deal.
It was a huge deal at the time. Yes.
Which I think it would be a big deal if they won this game. I have no idea whether, you know, what kind of caliber club Oklahoma State was at the time, but it's one of those where it looks really good on paper. It's from a quote unquote Power Five conference. Mm-hmm. You know, this program, this regime needs some sort of watershed moment, mm-hmm. in my opinion, and this could be it. I don't think that Texas Tech is an incredible team. I think they're solid. You know, they have this cool, you know, watch the game in a half hour function on YouTube where you can watch the whole Texas Tech UTEP game from last week. So I did that yesterday and they looked good. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think they looked amazing. There are some things that they do that I think could be problematic for the Wildcats to handle. But as far as, you know, the scheduling goes, I mean, I think the way you should set up your schedule is you have one Power Five opponent, one sort of, you know, Northern Arizona-esque, maybe FCS or lower tier, mm-hmm. Team like that, and then a group of five thrown in there. The problem that Arizona has had as far as not having Power Five opponents, and it's sort of a technicality, is that BYU doesn't count. BYU technically...
Well, they don't count because they don't play in a Power Five conference.
But they are a Power Five caliber school program, in my opinion.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah. They have the size of a Power Five team.
Notre Dame doesn't play in a Power Five conference. Would you call them a Power Five caliber?
Absolutely.
No, I would.
When was the last time BYU won its league?
Well, that's independent. So I don't know.
The last time Notre Dame won its league, that's right. But it's funny, in my head, Lev, BYU will forever be a Mountain West team or a WAC team.
I get
team,
that.
Which isn't, that's no knock, but I mean, I put sort of their caliber of talent on par with the Mountain West. but that's just me. They're also older and bigger than, you know, nearly every team they would play in the Mountain West.
Scheduling is a big thing in college football. College football is not a sport that's equitable, right? Not every team plays the same number of home games. Not every conference plays the same number of league games. If Arizona had played the exact same schedule that Texas Tech has played so far and vice versa, mm-hmm. what do you think their records would be? Like, if Arizona played UTEP and Montana State, both games at home, they'd be 2-0.
Well, they better be
2-0. There's no doubt.
Absolutely.
I mean, would they have allowed only 13 points in those games based on what we've seen from their defense? Probably not, but they'd be 2-0. Would Texas Tech be 2-0 if they opened the season at Hawaii before coming back home to face Northern Arizona? I don't know.
Well, that's a tough opener. Well, Hawaii's, they're 2-0 in Pac-12 play.
They are.
So far this season.
Well, they have more wins against Pac-12 teams than Oregon State has in a very long time. You made such a great point, Michael, about Arizona and Kevin Sumlin having a win to hang his hat on.
Yeah.
Right? The Kevin Sumlin era, such as it is, he is 5-9.
6-8.
6-8. That's right.
How dare you shortchange
him? Five games last year and one game this year. Let's name those teams, shall we?
That they've beaten?
Yes.
They beat Southern Utah,
mm-hmm.
Oregon State, Cal, mm-hmm. Oregon, Colorado, and Northern Arizona.
So they
two
really
of those,
have
two of those six are FCS.
Two of those six are FCS. Yeah. I would say that of the four major conference teams who they've beaten, well, let's see. Colorado fired its coach, right?
Yep.
I mean, Cal was okay. Cal, that's a big boy win.
I thought Oregon was a good win too.
Oregon's a good win. That's exactly
the best win that they've had,
right?
Without question. And there's like somewhere in the back of my mind, I'm sort of thinking maybe this is going to be another one of those games where we have very low expectations for what's going to happen, and then they just come out and dominate a team that we think is pretty good. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I think that's at least one of the possibilities of what could happen Saturday. Well,
it all depends on kind of what you choose to believe, I guess, too. Is this team the offensive juggernaut that it showed last week against NAU early on, putting up how many in the first half?
51.
51 in the first half, benching its starting quarterback midway through the second quarter, or early in the second quarter, and cruising? Or are they the team that allowed NAU to score 40 points?
I think that this is a team that is capable of being great offensively.
Okay.
A lot of weapons, unique quarterback talent, who can do a lot of different things. I mean, I don't, you know, you talk about like not showing your cards last week. I mean, Tate ran two times and only one was a quote unquote designed run. And it was a 1 yard run where he basically could have just fallen over and mm-hmm. crossed the goal line. We're going to see more of like the full Tate arsenal this week. They have a deep core of running backs. I think the wide receivers are okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're better than a lot of people thought. I thought the offensive line performed way better this last week. And I don't know how much of that had to do with the opponent, how much of it had to do with the types of plays they were running, whether it was just the second week as opposed to the first week. That's kind of the still sort of an unknown in a way, because you've got three guys that you feel pretty good about up there, and then two spots where you're still sort of, you know, uncertain. But yeah, they can be great offensively. Can they be average defensively? Because that's all they need to be to have a good season.
Well, on offense, the one thing I liked about Arizona over the last 2 weeks is you don't know what you're going to get out of the wide receiver group. J.J. Taylor, that's going to be a constant.
Which you think is a good thing, right?
That's a good thing, because, yeah. Joyner, he led the team against Hawaii, and then against NEU, he only had, one catch? 15 yards? Mm. So you don't know what you're going to get out of that wide receiver group, which is going to make Arizona difficult to game plan against. But
that's a really optimistic way to look at that, though. I would say you don't know what you're going to get out of your wide receiver group, and that's a concern. To me, at least, you know what Khalil Tate's sort of floor is, right?
Sure.
You know, his floor is pretty good. His floor is pretty high. Same thing for J.J. Taylor. To me, the wide receiver group is a big question mark, especially now that they're going up against presumably players with Big 12 conference size, with, you know, cornerbacks, with DBs, with safeties, with guys who look like they should be playing on Saturdays. I'm not sure they saw that against both Hawaii and NAU. Both of those defenses, I thought, looked really small.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say in support of Justin's opinion about the wide receivers is I think it's a good sign if Khalil Tate is spreading the ball around.
That's a great point.
It might be an illustration that he's running the offense better, and he's not just locking in on one guy or one spot. Granted, you know, all four of Drew Dixon's receptions came from Grant Gunnell, so you have to sort of take that out of the equation a little bit. And I still think things are going to change over the course of the season with that group. Booby Curry is going to come back maybe this week or soon. That was certainly the implication from Kevin Sumlin's press conference this week. So there's another big body added to the mix. It's been interesting how Tavian Cunningham has taken on such a prominent role.
Had no idea. Did not expect this.
Yeah, I think I said this to Justin the other day. I don't know if it was on the radio or the podcast or whatever, but the one thing he has that none of those other guys really have is that pure deep speed.
Right, top end
so speed. That makes him different. You know, some of the other guys are sort of, you know, you can't really distinguish one from the other, but he has that ability to stretch the field, which is important, of course, because you do not want the safeties to be, you know, hanging out near the line of scrimmage, spying Tate, spying the running backs. You want to be able to open up some space for those guys underneath.
But Ryan, you pitched the question, are you going to think about Arizona and what they're capable of doing on offense or the defense over the last two games? And with my role at the Arizona Daily Star, I got my ear to the streets. You know, seriously, being a producer at the Star, you don't interact with the fans, but you see their comments.
Right.
You see everything that they think of when they talk about Arizona football. And almost every single one of our posts on Facebook, they don't talk about Khalil Tate. They don't talk about J.J. Taylor. They don't talk about the offense at all. Mm-hmm. They talk about how atrocious the defense has been, giving up 41 points against NEU over 400 yards.
Right.
So I think the defense right now is the biggest concern.
Right.
If I'm just speaking from
100%.
From someone or who has seen Arizona fans. I mean, Arizona fans, they came to the NEU game last week wearing Fire Marcel Yates t-shirts. I saw photos of fans wearing Fire Marcel Yates t-shirts.
Wow.
Yeah, so they're passionate about the defense right now.
I would say that having to guess, and you guys are the experts much more so than I am, I think both Arizona's offensive success and its defensive struggle says a lot about its depth on both sides of the ball. I think that offensively they have far more weapons. Grant Gunnell, is there a second teamer on defense who looked as good as Grant Gunnell did on offense a week ago?
And that's it's a great point.
Right.
Yeah. If you consider Anthony Pandy to be a second teamer, that would say maybe, but I don't really consider him that. He's sort of the 12th man on the 11-man defensive unit.
When Anthony Pandy's in the game, it's still a competitive game. When Grant Gunnell's in the game, it's already out of hand.
Right. But when defense, to me too, it's, you know, depth is the last thing that comes. Right. Is when you're rebuilding a team, and trust me, I've been around for way too many of these kind of rebuilding seasons. It's the depth that's the last thing. You know, most teams can put together 11 on either side who can play a little bit, but you know, good teams have 20 on each side. To me, what last week showed is that Arizona has far more depth and far more skill on offense than it has on defense. I think if Arizona just has to play its first teamers on both sides, maybe it looks a little bit better defensively than it did last week. I just did not see any, especially late in that game. It seemed to me that NAU was basically able to just drive it well. And that, to me, shows that Arizona better not have any guys get hurt on defense. It shows that Arizona better not, you know, need to show off its depth, because it has none on defense. Offensively, even if Tate got hurt tomorrow and Tate's done for the year, you still feel pretty good about the offense because of how good Grant Gunnell has looked in very limited reps.
I think they'd be okay. They'd be a different looking offense, different style, but I think they'd be okay. I think it's a great point, Ryan, and I think that the depth is going to be tested in a big way this week because Texas Tech is a tempo team.
Yep.
They are going to play really fast, and you're going to have to rotate or you're going to have to get off the field, you know, and based on what we've seen so far, this defense has not really shown that it can get off the field on a consistent basis. I think if my research is correct, they have one like pure three and out. Mm-hmm. Forced so far, where the team goes 1-2-3 and punt. There have been some other ones where it's been like two plays and a turnover, that sort of thing, but like just three plays and a punt, I believe there's been one forced by the defense in two games.
Was that against NAU?
Against NAU, I think. Oh. Yeah.
Okay, because I think the punter for Hawaii, he only came on the field one time.
At the very end when they were running the clock.
And that wasn't a three and out either. Yeah. They had gotten at least one first down on that drive. So, yeah, that's going to be tested in a major way. I like where the defensive line is trending. They used Vinton Connolly and Keon Bars a lot last week. and this is going to be a crazy thing to say, but I actually liked it when they went to the three-man line with but they figured figured out how to do it. They had the three guys were Brown in the middle, JB, not Belknap, which I never understood. All due respect to Justin Belknap. I mean, he's like 240 pounds, should not be playing nose guard in any sort of configuration. So they put JB in the middle with Kylan Wilborn and Jalen Harris, and they basically used Anthony Pandy as a fourth rusher, even though he was playing a linebacker position and standing up. And I think he showed on his high school film that he's good at that, and I think it's a good use of personnel. Linebacker depth I do not think is very good at all. They've got Pandy, who's the third man behind Schooler and Fields, but then Dede Coleman is still young and raw, and Darian Clark is still young and raw and has to sit out the first half. Cornerback depth, actually like, because I think both freshmen have shown some nice things, and Bobby Wolf and Christian Roland Wallace. But the one position that I think may be the most disappointing of all, even more so than the defensive line, is safety.
Yeah.
I think people just kind of assumed coming into the year, oh, safety, they're totally fine. They've got tons of guys, blah, blah. They haven't produced at that position, especially against the pass. Mm-hmm. And also the depth concerns me there as well. I was saying to somebody the other day, like, if they had P.J. Johnson and Isaiah Hayes on this team, I feel like they'd be 2-0. I think they would have figured out a way to beat that, to win that Hawaii game. Isaiah Hayes is someone who is a free safety. He could have come in for a struggling Scotty Young, and maybe stabilized things back there. And P.J. Johnson, we know, was a big playmaker on the defensive tackle. But that's neither here nor there because, you know, those guys are gone.
Right. Not to make excuses for Marcel Yates, but, you know, we talked about keeping it vanilla and not showing all of your cards last week. If Arizona was at any point going to run a four-man front or at any point was going to throw a wrinkle in, they weren't going to show anybody playing any.
Right.
And frankly, in the second half, I'm not sure they were going to play a whole lot of guys who were going to really be significant parts of their team this season. You know, to me, now, should Arizona running a vanilla offense and a vanilla defense beat the you-know-what out of NAU every time? Absolutely. Yeah. Should they ever give up 40 to NAU? No.
Tristan Cooper said that they basically checked out mentally at halftime.
Oh, that's a good thing
to say. He was very frank about it, which is one of the things I really like about Tristan Cooper, is he tells the truth. He's like, guys thought the game was over. I thought the game was over. He's like, I'm sitting in the locker room going, why do I feel like I'm about to go home now? So that's a sign of immaturity, right? That they did not handle that situation well. But if you're going to do it, the best time to do it is when you're up 51-13 against an FCS opponent. Lesson learned, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the thing that has plagued this program since Kevin Sumlin got here. They talked about it after the ASU game. They've talked about it this year. Playing that complete game, playing well from the start to the finish, hasn't happened very often. Maybe Oregon might be the only time where you can really point to it and say that this is a complete game. This is, you know, this is what it's supposed to look like from beginning to end.
Lev, you had a chance to talk to some of the defensive guys heading into this week. And one thing that I took away after watching the video clips and reading your stories, these guys are playing for Marcel Yates right now. They don't like the finger pointing. They don't like the blame being put on Marcel Yates. They think as players, they should take most of the blame because they're the ones that's the product on the field. What did you take away out of talking to those guys?
Yeah, I would have expected them to say that. I think they like Marcel. They genuinely do. I mean, you remember when...
Well, they wanted him to be the next head coach.
Just going
to
say, when the job was open, there were defensive players, even offensive players, I feel like, openly campaigning for Marcel, you know, on social media. But, you know, this is a bottom line business. And the bottom line is that they haven't had the jump that people expected. Now, I have noted that they actually improved in several areas over the course of the first three seasons. And then it feels to me like they took a step backward against Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Tony Fields was talking about how, oh, you know, once we get everybody on the same page, you know, it'll be great. And then I was like, well, what happened in the first game? Like, why hasn't that happened yet?
Why are we
should
year,
be past that point.
Yeah, why are we in year three of the guy
year
being
four. Four
and the guy being defensive coordinator and talking about getting everybody on the same page?
That's exactly right.
Right. I would understand. I would absolutely understand if offensive players talked about that. If offensive players use that as an excuse, because you're running an entirely new system under Kevin Sumlin, right? But defensive guys in year four? With Marcel
we're also
Yates
talking
here?
About veteran players at a lot of spots, too. Linebackers. These safeties, you know, two of the three are upperclassmen. Mm-hmm. Christian Young of the starters is the only one who's an underclassman. You got veteran cornerbacks, you've got veteran linebackers. So something's not adding up there. They were clearly like confused a lot against Hawaii, which given that they had the entire offseason to prepare for that game doesn't make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. One thing that I'm going to be on the lookout for this week against Texas Tech is tackling in open space. From watching that game against UTEP, it is a lot of get the ball out of the quarterback's hands as quickly as possible. They've got a little slot receiver who's going to like remind you a lot of Wes Welker. Ryan, and they've got a 6 foot
pride of Texas.
Yeah, they've got a 6'6" wide receiver, TJ Vasher, who's the nephew of Nathan Vasher, former NFL cornerback, who's going to present some matchup problems. But it's going to be a lot of get the ball out quick and try to tackle us in space. So is Arizona going to be up to the task in that area? I don't know. I really don't know.
We'll preview and predict the score to that game coming up in just a little bit. But guys, an interesting week of Pac-12 football. The non-conference schedule is very intriguing, starting with the game tonight, Washington State taking on Houston on ESPN. Is Wazoo on upset alert?
I put them on upset alert earlier in the week, and I think they are. I don't know why I keep doubting mm-hmm. Washington State. It's probably a bad business decision on my part to do that. But I remember what it was like when Arizona went to Houston last year. It was tough. It was humid. Granted, that was a day game. This is a night game. But, I know Houston has struggled defensively, even with that Oliver last year, and it certainly didn't look great defensively against Oklahoma. But that game wasn't a complete wipeout. And I think Dana Holgorsen's a good coach. That's two air raid disciples, right, Ryan?
Yes.
Holgorsen and Leach.
Yes.
Matching up against each other. So, I don't know. I think 9 points, which is a spread, is a bit much. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a close game. And I think it's a game Washington State could lose.
Are there two nuttier coaches in college football? And I mean that as an absolute compliment. I mean that as I'm setting my DVR for this game, because you will see some wacky stuff, I think, when both of them play each other here. I just think, to me at least, Leach has got this thing humming, as Wazoo clearly proves every year. Pretty much doesn't matter who their quarterback is.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Although Gardner Minshew might be way better than any of us thought based on his NFL debut.
Entirely possible, but it's small sample size. And I think that in this game, I don't know, Vegas isn't wrong very often. They have Washington State at a 9.5 point favorite on the road. To me, that shows that Houston is not quite ready for prime time.
It's too high.
So you like Washington State in that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The next game, Air Force in Colorado. This is all starting on Saturday. Nice little in-state matchup. Colorado, they upset Nebraska at home. Mel Tucker, why are you giving me that look, calling it an upset?
Because it shouldn't have been an upset.
Well, Nebraska is number Nebraska a week ago.
Nebraska, they were number 25 in the country. Colorado was unranked. So I figured, yeah, that is an upset. But
technically.
Mel Tucker showed some guts in that game. Colorado looked pretty decent. What do you think about Colorado playing Air Force this week?
I think I saw that this is the first time they're playing each other in 50 years.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, I don't know what the background is as to why they haven't faced each other, but Air Force is a tough out. They play like all, military academies. There's a large degree of sort of an option style mm-hmm. Of football. They're a well-coached team. Colorado is absolutely ripe for a letdown after a hugely emotional type of game. I think this is one where, just again, if I was a betting man, which I am not, like I might bet Air Force in the first half in this game, or I might just take those 4 points and take my chances. I think if Colorado wins, it's going to be close, like a field goal kind of deal.
Yeah, this is where teams like Air Force and to a greater extent, Army and Navy really give teams trouble. It's not when they're in week one. It's not when you have all season to prepare. Or all offseason to prepare. It's when they're snuck in week three after you've played two, pretty big rivals. So,
well, who did Army play last week?
Michigan.
And they took Michigan overtime, right?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, no, I'm with Lev on this. I would be on upset alert, certainly, if I was Colorado. But, man, it is a fascinating slate of games this week.
Stanford taking on Michael Lev's favorite team, UCF, in Orlando.
How about
now, Stanford, they don't have their quarterback, but...
No, they do.
Oh, KJ Costello is back.
Yeah, but...
They do have their quarterback.
But they don't have their left tackle.
Walker Little's out for the season. Talk about interesting point spreads. I mean, UCF is favored by 8.5 points. So this is a quote unquote group of five school favored by 8.5 over a quote unquote power five school. I'll give Stanford credit. I mean, they're not afraid to play people. They're not afraid to go across the country to play people. You know, UCF has been like pining to get this caliber of opponent to face them so they can boost their resume. But I don't know, man, this is going to be a true test for the Cardinal to see what they're made of. And I frankly don't have a ton of faith in their ability to go across the country, you know, play in the hot,
good team,
humidity, the sun, play against a really good opponent. I think it was Bill Connolly on ESPN said that Stanford is like the slowest team in the country as far as like plays run per game, and UCF is the fastest. So there's a contrast there. It's going to be tough. It's going to be really tough.
Stanford or UCF?
Yeah, I think UCF.
Yeah, UCF?
Yeah, me too. It's their Super Bowl. It's a chance for them to kind of go legit, if that makes any sense. And again, for Stanford, it may just be another game. And this is not a team that right now that's anywhere near full strength. And frankly, didn't look very good when it was at full strength. You watched that Northwestern game. That was brutal.
Do you think that we're sort of seeing the beginning of the decline of Stanford? Not in the sense that they're going to be...
Decline of Stanford or David Shaw?
Well, here's the thing. How can you maintain what Stanford has done under Harbaugh/Shaw for 20 years at Stanford, yes, given the academic requirements that they have, how difficult it is to get into school there? You're not going to get the same players that caliber of athlete that USC is going to get in general.
But USC has ceased playing a Jim Harbaugh term, manly man football.
Well, maybe Stanford has too. They've tried to, and it hasn't worked.
Right, but what I think my point is as USC has gone away from that, and who knows who their coach will be next year. To me, this gives Stanford even more talent to try to convince to come up there. I've declared the Stanford era dead three times in the last 10 years, and I'm not ready to do it for a long time now.
I guess I'm overstating it by saying that they're gonna die. I think they could decline 10 to 12. I think winning 10 to 12 games annually, mm-hmm, is really tough. Mm-hmm. 7 to 9 victories annually, I think that's certainly still doable for that program. But
well, that's what kept Rich Rodriguez employed at Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Well,
going 7-5.
I guess it's just like, how do you view Stanford? You know, do you view Stanford as like an upper echelon Pac-12 program? They certainly have been one. Mm-hmm. For a long time.
They're a niche program. And I mean, that is a compliment. I think that they run a style, especially offensively, that I think attracts the kinds of kids who can get into their school. There's a lot of offensive linemen and tight ends who want to go to Stanford because look around the NFL at the offensive lines and at the tight ends, and a lot of them are Stanford guys.
Yeah, if you want to be an NFL tight end, go to Stanford.
Right.
You can get in.
Right. And to me, at least, there are worse ways to build a program than by getting all the best offensive linemen.
Yeah.
And as long as they're getting those guys, I think Stanford's going to be a very good football program. But they'll lose on Saturday.
Moving on to the next matchup. If you asked Ryan, you'd think these were the defending Mountain West champions. The BYU Cougars. They're hosting the USC Trojans this Saturday in Provo. Now, if we're getting technical here, like Michael Lev and I did with the Nebraska-Colorado game, USC ranked number 24, BYU is unranked. So, is USC on upset alert? I think they are. I think BYU pulls out the win.
It's, again, a
big win against Tennessee.
It's a difficult matchup because BYU plays sort of a Stanford style of ball. Very pro style, physical.
Punch in the face.
Older guys, they're at home. This is the first road start for Keaton Slovis, the freshman quarterback for USC. That's always problematic for a true freshman when you're going on the road. I think it's going to be a close game for most of it, but I think USC pulls away at the end. Just superior speed is what I would cite. I mean, they've got their wide receiving core is so good. Second, I would say probably the second best to Alabama. Alabama's receiving core is on another level. I mean, it is utterly ridiculous. But USC is really good, and I think they can exploit BYU in that area.
Have you ordered your problem sloved shirt yet?
I have not. I haven't even heard of that.
That exists. It's sad that I know that exists. I'm with Lev on this. It's hard to conceive of a world in which USC would be that bad. I would lose to BYU on the road.
I know BYU beat Tennessee.
Sure they did. I'm not sure Tennessee is Tennessee. To me, BYU, I have a hard time buying them right now. And I think USC, despite all the chaos, I think USC has players. And so, at the end of the day, in part because of their skill position, guys, SC wins.
Here, I will say this. I would rather be in, Utah's shoes Saturday, with a Friday showdown against USC looming next week. Mm-hmm. Utah hosts Idaho State. And USC has to go to BYU before, coming back home to face Utah. So, kind of looking ahead to kind of the first really big conference game of the season, like advantage Utah.
Well, yeah. And that's the annual weeknight game, Utah USC comes down to a field goal kind of game.
Things get crazy.
Yeah.
ASU, they're on the road this week against Michigan State. I think Michigan State bounces back because ASU beat the Spartans last year mm-hmm. in Tempe. I like the Spartans bouncing back in this one.
I do too. ASU's got a true freshman quarterback, and to go on the road for the first time and to go there to have to face those guys,
it's tough.
That's going to be tough. It's going to be tough.
Michigan State has a really good run defense, and Arizona State has struggled to run the ball, which is something that Herm Edwards absolutely positively wants to do. I will say this though: the point spread is really high. Michigan State's favored by 14. They're not a great offensive team. I can see this game being somewhat similar to last year's, low scoring, defensive oriented, field position, etc. I can see, Michigan State winning 17-10. But if I were a betting man, I would probably take those points and just bank on Arizona State being able to kind of keep it close.
At least 10 points, right? 14 points?
14 is a lot.
I think that's a little disrespectful to ASU.
Yeah. Well, it's the Pac-12. Pac-12 earned, did they deserve national respect at this point? Probably not.
Yeah. Cal Poly against Oregon State at Reser Stadium.
Oh, my God. I got nothing for you here.
Oregon State.
I really hope Oregon State, for their sake, Oregon State better win this game because I don't know, what other wins are out there on the schedule.
Idaho State versus Utah.
Yeah, come on.
Same.
Moving on.
North Texas, the Fighting Green versus Cal.
Here's another one where, again, I would take the points. Mm-hmm. Cal's favored by 14. It's another letdown possibility coming off a huge, maybe what people feel like is a program-changing win at Washington. Cal is not an offensive juggernaut, just like Michigan State. So I would probably take those points. North Texas is a pretty, respectable group of five program.
This game was supposed to be Sonny Dykes versus Seth Luttrell in a matchup of former Arizona offensive coordinators, but Sonny Dykes left for Texas. To me, Seth Luttrell is a really good young coach. I think he's a guy who's going to end up at a Power 5 program maybe as soon as next year. I think this, not unlike Stanford UCF, I think this game may matter more to North Texas than it does to Cal. And I think for that reason that they keep it close, but I think Cal wins the game. Fun fact about North Texas. Do you know this? Mean Joe Green went to North Texas. After he left, they started calling themselves the Mean Green. Isn't that cool?
So is that their official mascot?
Yep.
They're called the Mean Green?
Yep. I think they're technically the Eagles. But they call themselves the Mean Green.
That's awesome. Now, the top team in the Pac-12, Hawaii, they're facing Washington in Seattle this week. But it's in Seattle. Hawaii's got to travel this time around. They don't have Pac-12 teams coming over to them. They got to make the trip against Washington, who just lost to Cal. I think the Huskies are looking to really get back on the field, and I think they'll punch Hawaii. I think they'll punch Hawaii in the face.
Bounce back game.
Yeah, I think the
wipeout.
The same reasons that made Hawaii maybe good against Arizona in week zero there. The fact that they were playing at home, the fact they were playing in the heat, the fact that they had pretty good small receivers, some good skill position guys. Washington neutralizes all of that right away. Yeah, I think Washington wins and maybe big.
Hey, here's a question for you. Mm-hmm. What conference and what division are North Texas in? Anybody?
It's not the Sun Belt, is it?
No.
Conference USA.
Yes. And which side? Did you even know there were two sides in conference?
They're in the USA side. It's called one. This isn't like the Mountain West, where one's the Mountain and one's the West. No,
no. It's CUSA West is what they're in.
That makes sense.
USA side. Nice. What's the non-USA side? Ryan, Canada or Canada.
The conference side?
The conference side.
Conference.
which division are you in? We're in the conference division. Makes as much sense as a lot of things in college football.
Oklahoma and UCLA.
Primetime on Fox.
Oh, boy.
Poor UCLA.
Poor Chip.
What's that line?
23 and a half.
I'll take the over.
I'd take UCLA to cover, too, but to lose.
I'd take UCLA.
Right.
I just, man.
They are hurting right now.
They are hurting, and I think we talked about this the other day, but they got Washington State at Washington State after this before coming to Arizona. Arizona is going to have a bye heading into that game. I mean, very possible, probably even likely that UCLA is going to be 0-4 and looks really kind of beaten up physically and psychologically. Right. Coming in here in a couple weeks.
Right. This is where the marriage between UCLA and Chip Kelly will be tested, I think, in the next couple of weeks. You know, we're sitting here in Tucson, Arizona, talking rather honestly about Kevin Sumlin's long-term future here based on what he's done at Arizona. Imagine if you're at UCLA. Imagine the money they've given Chip Kelly and how bad they've looked. I mean, you lose at home to San Diego State. I mean, you lose at Cincinnati, and now you may just get embarrassed by Oklahoma. To me, this is going to be a really interesting 3 weeks in Westwood, I think.
Is there a possibility where there's just as many Oklahoma fans as UCLA fans?
Probability.
You think there'd be more?
More.
Probability. Yeah. My first ever time at the Rose Bowl, I must have been 10 or something. UCLA played Nebraska, and it was a good UCLA team, and there were more Nebraska fans there than there were UCLA fans. Just because I think there's just more of them.
And UCLA was
good.
Somewhat
good-ish.
Yeah.
Good-ish then. You know, to me, yeah, absolutely. It's going to be an Oklahoma home game.
And with all due respect to Norman, Oklahoma, you know, LA is more of a travel destination.
Yeah. If you're an Oklahoma grad living in Denver, you'd rather go to LA for the weekend than back to Norman for a game.
Of course.
Yeah. Before we talk Texas Tech, Arizona, Montana against Oregon.
Yeah.
In Eugene, I like the Ducks winning big.
Whatever the score was of last week's game against Nevada, it'll be something like that again. Yeah. You know, 77-6.
Montana's 2-0.
Okay.
throwing that out there, guys. Bobby Houck, you think Bobby Houck gets embarrassed? Bobby Houck's a good coach.
I will say this could be a tiny bit of a look ahead game for Oregon because they've got a trip to Stanford next week, so you know they might not give Montana their full attention, but I really don't think it's going to matter.
Montana has beaten, by the way, South Dakota and North Alabama.
Wow,
they took it to 61-17.
If they had played North Dakota and South Alabama, Alabama
what conferences are those teams in?
Oh man,
they're in the conference division.
Arizona, Texas Tech, 7:30 p.m. kickoff on ESPN.
Yeah.
Arizona getting on national TV against Texas Tech. What do you guys think is going to happen in this game? What do you guys like?
I think Michael Lev's deadline is going to be way too tight because this is an ESPN game and two teams that are going to score a bunch of points. That's what I think is going
to
happen.
Yeah, we're probably going to get the slide to 7:41 for that kickoff. High scoring game, I think, for sure. You know, which team can make just a handful of plays defensively on third down to force a field goal or maybe get a turnover is going to make the difference. And, you know, my prediction, I don't know if that appears online, maybe not until Saturday. I know it's going to be in the paper Saturday, but I'm going with Texas Tech, 41 and Arizona 37. Here's the thing. I don't think Texas Tech is an amazing team. And Arizona's upside, their potential might be greater than what Texas Tech is just based on like the talent of Khalil Tate and a lot of the skill position guys that they have. But like, I have just no reason to give Arizona the benefit of the doubt at this point, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, we haven't seen it. Maybe they will come together like they did in that Oregon game, and no one saw that coming either. Right at this moment, I just can't go there.
Interesting. I think it's going to be a dark day for defense. I'm not sure anybody can stop anybody in this game. Because I'm also kind of fatalistic when it comes to, say, late night kickoffs and deadlines. I think this is going to come down to the wire. I see Arizona winning this game 54-48 in overtime. I think they win it on a Khalil Tate high step walk into the end zone. You know, like a an RPO.
So
the RPO that we've discussed so frequently on this podcast. I think it's an RPO, and everybody bites on JJ Taylor. Khalil Tate walks in.
So they win by six. So that means Texas Tech, they get the ball first. Arizona somehow
makes a stop and wins by six. 54-48 in overtime.
That would be the second time in a row at Arizona Stadium that Matt Wells has lost in overtime on a walk-off.
After getting walked off on by New Mexico State in the greatest day in their history.
Yep.
Larry Rose, the
Arizona
fourth.
Bowl.
Yes. Yeah.
I like specific situations.
I was going to say, you stole Justin's thunder.
I like Arizona winning this one, and it's not going to be in overtime, but it is going to be in walk-off fashion at the end of the game. Lucas Haversick is going to make a 55-yard field goal on the left hash.
Oh, even the left hash. Love it.
59-56 is going to be the final score.
Oh, my God. 59-56.
So take the over, I think, is basically what we're talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is great for me, Brian. I'm just going to write about all the scoring plays, and I'll have a whole story done no matter what happens at the end.
And then they did this, and then that happened, and then that happened. Yes. It's... I don't know. This is a weird game. This is a weird game. And I think that, you know, we've been kind of laughing a little bit here in the last 10 minutes, but I need to put a big highlighter on this. This is a massive game for Kevin Sumlin in Arizona. This is a massive game. I think if they can win this, you go into a bye, then you beat UCLA. Arizona's 3-1 and back to where they were at the start of the season, where we're talking 7-8 wins, go to a bowl game, build the program, blah, blah, blah.
It's even more massive than the Hawaii game.
Oh, no question.
You can kind of excuse the Hawaii game for a couple reasons. One, the travel aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And two, that it's just sort of a weird team to play, and a lot of teams have had trouble in that venue. This is at home. You've had a bye week. Mm-hmm. You've had time to assess and reassess your roster. It's to me, it's kind of like it's sort of now or never.
It's massive because they lost to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Too. Had they beaten Hawaii, you sit there and you go, well, you know, let's see where Arizona stands against another Power 5 team. But you just, if you're the U of A, you can't go 1-2 in conference play.
For a second straight year.
For a second consecutive year.
After your predecessor went 17-1 in conference play.
And never lost a non-conference home game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big game. Saturday at Arizona Stadium. Texas Tech, they come to Tucson. They'll play the Arizona Wildcats. Kickoff is set for 7:30 p.m. That's Michael Lev. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Michael J. Lev, or you can catch all of his content on Tucson.com and the Wildcaster app. Also, subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely.
For Lev, for Ryan, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.